Hello, Lunch Talk Live on this Wednesday, June 10. Mike Tirico, glad you are with us. Our last couple of shows, we started the show during the pandemic without sports. As sports returns, we'll go back to covering sports. So we thank you all for joining us. If you missed any of the interviews from any of our shows over the last dozen weeks or so, including some very interesting ones over the last 2 weeks especially, they're all available on the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as our NBC Sports YouTube channel. It's only taken me 9 weeks, but I finally have the order of all that stuff right. Great show for you coming up today. It'll be led off by Robbie Earl in just a moment. We'll be talking about the return of the Premier League as world soccer gets going. Robbie will join us as soccer's back in action in the Premier League on NBC's Family of Networks next weekend. We'll also have a pretty special and deep conversation that we recorded yesterday with one of the players involved in the Black Hockey Alliance, an alliance of hockey players who are trying to bring attention to the many causes that are out there in the world of sports. Steve Letarte, NASCAR is on the track tonight with a cup race and also some news around NASCAR and the protests we've seen recently. So Steve will join us on that and what's been happening on the track. And then with golf returning tomorrow on Golf Channel, first round of the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial, Kevin Na, the defending champion of that event, and our colleague Brandel Chambly will join me for conversation about such. That's the lineup. Here's what's going on in sports on this Wednesday. And the Colin Kaepernick presence continues to be brought up. More players, Matt Ryan of the Falcons, Malcolm Jenkins, some of the latest to speak publicly about their support. Will we see Kaepernick get a shot to get back in the league? Major League Baseball and the Players Association continue to play a long clay court tennis rally back and forth with their proposals, with not much happening trying to get back on the field. Fans are going to be at Talladega in a few weeks when NASCAR returns there. I'll ask Steve Letarte about the 5,000 fans that are planned to be back in the stands for that event. It'll be behind closed doors, but it's a week away. As mentioned, the Premier League will return with a couple of matches. Aston Villa against Sheffield United is having a terrific season, in Man City against Arsenal. We'll talk about that and much more. Our NBC Sports colleague, one of the Robbies, Robbie Earl, joins us. Are you ready to get back to work here, Robbie?
I am ready to get back to work. I think more importantly, my wife's ready for me to go back to work is the important point. I think 10 weeks in lockdown is enough for anybody.
Well, we look forward to getting everybody back on the air here in 1 week. So what are you sensing, Robbie, as the teams have done their training and they get prepared for the behind closed door matches? Two of them on Wednesday, 1 week from today, in a week and a half. It'll be a normal Premier League weekend, if you will, as we get the final 92 fixtures of the season scheduled and hopefully played.
I think, like us as broadcasters, it seems like those on the cold face, the players, the coaches, the managers, they want to get back to action now. We've had a united front from the Premier League, this Project Restart that's taken just over 3 weeks now to get to this point. The teams this weekend have had some competitive games. They could play teams within a 90-mile radius of themselves. So many have played teams from maybe a league below or not, just to get that competitive edge into the training. And so everybody's, I think, starting to feel like it's real, it's coming soon, and we've got to be prepared. Here, though, Mike, is a note of caution. And this story came out at the weekend that Manchester United, obviously one of the biggest clubs in English football, were playing Stoke City in a behind-closed-door friendly at the Manchester United training ground. Now, just before the Stoke team were to travel to Manchester, it was found out that the Stoke City manager, Michael O'Neill, had tested positive for COVID. And so the game had to be abandoned. Obviously, Manchester United didn't get the competitive game they want. And I think that was just a little warning to everybody that despite us all looking forward to the start, and despite us all looking forward to seeing all the players and the goals and the things that we've missed, that COVID is still around. And, you know, two or three cases in certain situations could very much put a spanner in the works of this Project Restart.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And Stoke, for those who don't follow English football as often, was up in the Premier League for quite some time, been down in the next level of the Championship the last couple of years. But those are the types of matches that the teams in the Premier League are using to be ready to compete and jump back in at the highest level. After watching Bundesliga matches and some of the other matches going on around the world, what do you expect for the level of competition as teams return to action against the other best in the world?
I think for the first game or two, we might not see quite the intensity that we're used to seeing. But we are talking about some of the high-skilled footballers in world football when you're talking of Kevin De Bruyne, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Mo Salah, you know, the list goes on of great players within the league. They will still be wanting to show how good they are. They are still wanting to get points, whether it's to win titles, whether it's to stay in the league or get European places. So I think over a very short space of time, we'll see good levels of football, good intensity, and teams really going for it. No game in the Premier League is a given. No game is a pushover or you're guaranteed the 3 points. And I think we'll still see that, even though there will be those different circumstances of no fans in the stadium.
And let's talk about the top of it, which probably has the least drama, and that's Liverpool after a very, very long drought with the opportunity here to close out what was on pace to be this runaway season and a very memorable end to a long drought of lifting the trophy for Liverpool.
Yeah, and it's been interesting, and Ola White and our own Rebecca Lowe sat down with a number of head coaches and talked. I think it was Rebecca who sat down with Jurgen Klopp, and he said, this will still be a special title when we win it. When the time's right, we will have special celebrations. And he's talked about making it a record season, that they could get record points, a record amount of wins. He's definitely put the pressure back on his players to say, we're not just going to kind of slope over the line and get a couple of wins and then call it a day. They're going to continue to want to win games. They want to going to set the standard. And although some people will say, well, it's always a different Premier League this time because we've had that break because of the COVID pandemic, Jurgen Klopp is determined to make sure that Liverpool continue to win their games and continue to do it at the best level they can.
I mentioned when you all get back to work a week from today, Aston Villa will be in one of the matches against a surprising side from this year in Sheffield United. And Aston Villa is right in the middle of what probably, Robbie, will be the most competitive and interesting watch in these last 92 matches or fixtures. And that's the teams that are going to stay up, the teams that will get relegated. That's an interesting battle with a lot of pressure for those clubs coming up over these next few weeks.
Well, when you think of Aston and Villa, Mike, and for people who don't know, it's a huge club in the Midlands and Birmingham, which is the second city in the UK. 45,000 fans fit into that stadium when things are going well. It's a huge football club that spent many years in the Championship, and they've worked so hard and so diligently to get into the Premier League. They got promoted last season. They're up this time, but they found it difficult. And here's then is another reality of what we've been facing over the last 9 or 10 weeks. The Aston Villa manager, Dean Smith, whose father was an Aston Villa fan himself, it took Dean to Aston Villa to support the team. His father passed away, 79 years of age, a couple of weeks ago through the COVID-19 virus. And so the mentality that he's going to have, the mentality around that football club, the importance to win games. And I think of the two games that are coming next Wednesday, Aston Villa v Sheffield United and Manchester City v Arsenal. Aston Villa have the biggest game because this is their catch-up game. They win this game, they jump out of those bottom three relegation places, and all of a sudden, just psychologically, Mike, it's such a great place for players to be. So it's a huge game for them. Sheffield United got promoted with them and doing ever so well. They're seventh in the table, but Aston Villa will be desperate to get those 3 points and get themselves out the bottom three.
So for those who don't watch the Premier League on a regular basis, even though the Championship winner is a runaway with Liverpool, and it's almost a coronation whenever that happens, there's going to be a lot that happens on the pitch over the next few weeks. Yeah. We see the picture of Dr. Martin Luther King over your left shoulder there. You have had some honest and poignant comments, eye-opening comments to our viewers in our conversations as well, Robbie, about racism and football in the UK. What perspective can you add to what you've watched in demonstrations, not just here in the US, but also happening in front of the US Embassy in London and all over Europe over the last 2 weeks?
Well, what I think in some respects in both men of colour, Mike, is that many times I think we've felt that, you know, racism is happening in our street, in our city, maybe in our state. But what we've seen over the last 2 weeks is that people have responded to the George Floyd incident with a movement that's gone global. in Europe, all countries over there. We've seen it in China, in all parts of Asia, in Africa, South Africa. We've seen a movement where people are saying this injustice is enough and that we have to do something about it. And what's really going to be interesting is we've seen some very high profile, prominent young black players making a stance, having a say, amplifying their voice and their celebrity to join this movement. I'm talking about the Raheem Sterlings and the Marcus Rashfords and Tyrone Mings, the big centre-back at Aston Villa, who's an England international. And it'll be interesting to see how maybe some of those players and a number of the teams who've supported the Black Lives Movement maybe celebrate or have something that they do during the course of the games, because the eyes of the world will be watching the start of the Premier League. It's the best league in the world. It's the richest league in the world. It's the most watched league in the world. And start from next Wednesday, June the 17th, there's going to be a huge focus and magnifying glass on that league. And I just wonder, and I'll be quite interested to see if some of the players use their position, use their platform and amplify the voice that they're trying to do and say enough is enough. And we have to get to the stage in this fight where talking is important, but we have to see change. We have to see action. And George Floyd was buried yesterday in the funeral. We have to make sure for the legacy of him and his family that this movement now continues the energy, continues the inertia, and we take some big, maybe uncomfortable, but some big steps forward.
Robbie, what was your reaction to the FA, the body that oversees every level of football, soccer in England, mm-hmm. when they said that protests will not come down with the same penalty that it may have in the past going by FIFA's laws? Almost there's more of an avenue to protest and use common sense in laying out any discipline that might come from writing something on a shoe, on a boot, on a T-shirt or things like that. How did you react to that news?
That's huge for the FA to do that, to give license to players to express themselves, how they feel, how clubs are feeling, to make an expression that will go over the world. It's huge for the FA. It's interesting, over here in the US, we've seen the NFL retract on the position they took with Colin Kaepernick. It'll be interesting to see once the other sports come back what their stance is on it. But for English football to do this is a real step forward. It's a move forward. And I'm pleased to say many corporations, broadcasters over in the UK are getting behind the players and the movement themselves and saying that they want to play their part in the equality for black and Asian minorities, ethnic minorities in the UK.
Robbie, as we wrap up, you've been really honest with our audience, but I think people are hearing and listening at a different level now. You've been so transparent about how difficult it was at times to play in the UK, to play in the Premier League. Is it any better for the players like Rashford and the other players you mentioned, any better for them to play now than it was in your day?
It's a really good point, Mike, that we had on a former international player who played in the Premier League on the Two Robbies podcast with me and Robbie Musto last week, Jan Åge Fjørtoft. And we were talking about the situation. I said, from the time I started, the early 80s through into the 90s, to be honest, Mike, in those situations, you had to keep your head down. You couldn't put your head above the parapet. You would be often seen as somebody with a chip on the shoulder or, you know, difficult to deal with. And that would be a characteristic that would stay with you through your career. And so because of that, as a player in those times, you used to just bite your tongue, sort of smile, get on with things and not make too much noise about it. What's been really pleasing with these young players, and some of them are early 20s, are still maturing into men and who they're going to be, but they've taken the stance, they've taken the platform. We've now got social media. We're now in a different world, a different generation, where people are prepared to listen. And what's been encouraging when we've seen demonstrations not only in the US, but all over the world, it's been every denomination of people from different classes, different backgrounds, different cultures. And because of that diversity, because the messages are being heard and discussed at a different level than we have in the past, that gives me hope that we can start to move forward and make some serious changes that not only this country, but the world needs to do for society.
We'll be watching with great interest, and as sports fans will also be watching with great excitement. As you said, the best football league in the world, the Premier League, is back 1 week from today. And Robbie Earl will be back in his normal spot on the desk. We look forward to hearing your conversations and having you explain what's going on in the sport on and off the pitch. Robbie, thanks for your honesty and your time during the pandemic here, and we'll see you soon.
Talk to you, Mark. See you soon.
Okay, Robbie Earl there. When we come back, Steve Letarte, one of our NASCAR analysts, will join us as NASCAR in the Cup Series is back on the track again at another midweek race. We'll talk about how busy the racing's been, how the racing's been, and more in a minute. All right, so June 21, when the NASCAR Cup Series rolls into Talladega, fans, 5,000 guests will be at the track. A minimum of 6 seats grouped together will be allowed, with fans adhering to social distancing of 6 feet. All the spectators 3 and over have to have a face covering, an initial screening to come in. You're going to see layers of this as fans return to sports of all types. It'll be a different experience going to the game or the track, but Talladega and NASCAR will be the first in that boat in some of the sports that have returned. Steve Letarte spent an hour or two of his life at Talladega, and he joins us here for a little bit. So this is the process and the progress of post-COVID return to action. And now that NASCAR, Steve, has really been incident-free in terms of COVID-19 through these first couple of weeks back, this seems to be a next layer. Am I missing something? Have things been as smooth as they seem to be so far in NASCAR's return?
They really have been relatively smooth. I think there's been an adjustment for the teams just because procedurally it's totally different. We're normally seeing these teams operate on a week-by-week basis. We're talking 2, sometimes 3 races per week. No practice, which I am all for. I think lack of practice has improved the racing. But I think what we learned is that we already knew the fans are the lifeblood of every sport. And while NASCAR and the governments did a nice job of getting the sport back on the racetrack for us to watch at home, there were some incidents. I think of Joey Logano and Chase Elliott at Bristol, an incident on the racetrack, which was covered well, but without the fans' approval or disapproval, whatever it was going to be, the noise, the energy, that's what drives sports. So I'm excited to see 5,000 fans back at Talladega. I know it's going to look different. As you mentioned, it's one more layer, but it's a layer in the right direction. And sports are all about the fans, so I can't wait to see them back at the track.
Especially the NASCAR drivers who connect with the fans so well, signing autographs on the way to their cars as they come from the garage area, all of that stuff. The one thing in watching, Steve, that has honestly felt different, maybe the only thing that has felt different, other than the visual of the shots off of turns, you see empty grandstands, is when the race ends. The sounds of the race, and Fox always does a great job, as our NBC crew does, with the natural sound of motorsports. The only thing that's different is when the guy gets out of the car and there's nobody to wave to or to kind of interact with. Other than that, it has felt normal. From your trained eye, how normal has the racing been in the 3+ weeks the sport's been back?
So for years, the conversation has, do we need to have 3-day weekends and 2 and 3 hours of practice for the best drivers in the world to go compete? Well, because of this pandemic, NASCAR was forced to reduce all of that. And a lot of these races, it's green flag at the first lap we see these cars on track. And I am hoping desperately that what we have learned as a sport is we do not need 3 hours of practice. It only allows the heavily funded teams to get better. The lack of practice has actually given a little bit of a challenge to the teams to figure it out on the fly during the race itself. It reminds me of other sports, like in football. You know, you got to make adjustments. Every drive is a new adjustment. And that's what I'm seeing at a NASCAR. While perhaps the winners aren't a huge variety of what we would normally see with practice, there are definitely names. John Hunter Nemechek has had some great runs. Corey LaJoie inside the top 20. These are names that we wouldn't expect to run there, and they are showing their talent without this practice. So I'm a big fan of the shortened weekend, and even some of the races are shorter. You know, tonight, the track will be Martinsville, the oldest track. It's been in NASCAR since the inception, and the race will be a little bit shorter under the lights. I think there are some history to 500 and 600 mile races, but my attention span is shorter over the year. I'm okay with a 90-minute or 2-hour race.
especially with the segments, too. You have a conclusion there, third of the way through or 25% of the way through, then 60% of the way through or so, and then you build towards the big finish of the race. And that does add to the shortened attention span for the younger generation or, as Steve said, for our generation as well. Is there anybody who needs a good run tonight? Because I've seen a lot of the similar names. I see Jimmy Johnson, his final year. That number keeps coming up the pylon, coming up a little bit. What can I look for? A couple of names to watch tonight in the race.
Well, I think Jimmy Johnson's first and foremost. He announced this will be his final year. We've yet to hear any word whether that will change with the delay. I personally don't feel it will. We've yet to hear anything out of his camp. But he's continuing to run better as his organization, Hendrick Motorsports, runs better. And we have seen Jeff Gordon get a win in his final year, Tony Stewart get a win in his final year. And I think a popular win would be Jimmy Johnson's, a seven-time champ. We all want to see him go to victory lane. But another name that's winless, as you see right here on the playoff leaderboard, Kyle Busch. He's run well and run up front, but I really think he needs to win to kind of get his name in yellow, to know he's guaranteed in the playoffs. That'll allow that team to kind of freewheel a little bit. You know, a win in NASCAR guarantees you're in the postseason. And I know from personal circumstance why it's easy to say the pressure's not there. Oh, it's there. They're lying if they say it's not there. These drivers are expected to win, and he's a big name that has yet to win this year.
All right, we'll keep an eye on those two cars as we go through. We'll also keep an eye on the 43. We had Bubba Wallace on. He was also on Dale Jr.'s Download. Had a real interesting back and forth on Instagram with a fellow driver as well regarding all of the race issues that have come up over the last few weeks. And the paint scheme on his car is going to be extraordinarily noticeable here tonight. Just your thoughts on how Bubba has not only stepped out and stepped forward, but how the NASCAR community that you've been a part of for a long time, Steve, has candidly taken on an issue that really was never discussed this much in public in stock car racing.
First, speaking of Bubba specifically, I couldn't be more proud. I call him a friend, and he has really become a leader and a spokesman in a sport that is predominantly white. He's the only black driver in the sport, and he has taken a position of conversation. And it's really giving me specifically a great opportunity to be quiet, to listen, to try to understand, to try to educate myself. And what he has done by taking the burden of communication and conversation on for the entire sport when it comes to the stars is really commendable. The paint scheme he'll run at Martinsville, I think, is a great opportunity, and it's something that needs to be done. It's going to be great to see that car on the racetrack tonight, prime time, under the lights at NASCAR's oldest track, being at Martinsville Speedway. And the sport in general, you know, there was a moment before the last race during the pace laps where the cars stopped silent on pit road, and the president of NASCAR, Steve Phelps, addressed the drivers and the fans over the team's radios and just told us all we could do better. And I was proud to be part of NASCAR. Mike, this is a sport that I have grown up in and that I have encouraged everyone to be a part of. And I want to make sure that encouragement is for everyone. I'm learning that perhaps over time, the things that have happened in the world, it's not inclusive and it needs to be. Everyone should be able to be a part of this sport, as in everything in this country. And I'm so proud of Bubba and the sport for, as you said, having the conversation. I think this is nowhere near a time where people should be silent and hide from these awkward conversations. And I applaud NASCAR and proud to be part of a sport that took that time, that took that moment and said, you know what? This is an important, we all need to listen. And I listened and I will continue to listen.
I appreciate the words from somebody who's been around it for so long. And to see that paint scheme, that livery on the 43 Richard Petty Motorsports car just adds to the volume that it sends as a message across this sport and across all sports, a message we're receiving. Steve, thanks for a few minutes. We appreciate it. I know you and the NBC guys will get back to work here in a couple of weeks at that doubleheader at Indy on the 4th of July weekend. We look forward to that. And thanks for helping us out here on the show along the way. It's been much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks. The show's been great. And as you said, racing's back. The fans are back. Well, personally, I can't wait to get back. I can't wait for the 4th of July to see the cars at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You know how it is. There's nothing like live sports. I cannot wait to start covering some live sports again.
Yeah, doubleheader would be pretty cool. Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it. The conversation regarding race and sports also has a hockey tone to it. And Matt Dumba, who was scheduled to join us yesterday, will join us today for a very interesting perspective on hockey and what's going on in our world right now. Be right back. Obviously, a lot of social injustice, racial injustice issues are being addressed in sports and in the National Hockey League. A group of non-white NHL players have formed the Hockey Diversity Alliance. It was announced on Monday. Evander Kane from the San Jose Sharks, Hakeem Olu no longer in the league, Wayne Simmonds, Trevor Daley among the players, and Matt Dumba from the Minnesota Wild is also part of that group of seven. Announced that on social media on Monday, and our pleasure to visit with Matt for a few minutes here to find out more about the what and the why. So let's hit the how this all came together, Matt, as you have played for the Wild now for 7 years as a defenseman, a guy who's a high pick in the league, and are using your voice towards this issue. How did this all come together?
Started coming together in November, actually. Just a group of guys talking, kind of expressing to each other that there's probably a need for this in the league. And as of the last 2 weeks, I think I've talked to these guys every day for over an hour. So there's been some really good talks, and I think we have an opportunity to do big things in our sports and, you know, help a lot of kids. I think that's one of our main focuses, is just eradicating racism and making sure our game's for everyone.
You mentioned you started the conversation back in November. The Hakeem Olu incident really brought a lot of conversation about treatment of players and race in hockey to much more of a top-line conversation. How much of it had you experienced growing up in Saskatchewan and your path to the National Hockey League?
Yeah, being a minority in the prairies in Saskatchewan and then in Calgary, it wasn't easy growing up. Kids with my darker skin tone really kind of threw the book at me, seeing what would stick as far as racial slurs. So just knowing all that, everything that my family went through, seeing my mom come away from the rink, seeing my dad, you know, our family leave in tears. It just, talking to these guys just rekindled those feelings. And, when I think about it more, and when I was, laying my head down to sleep at night, feeling this, it was just such strong feelings and such passionate feelings that I don't believe any kid should have to go through that, or, you know, bottle that up or hide that from their parents, trying to be strong, as like all of us in our group did. And I'm sure so many kids, minority kids across our countries do all the time, trying to take the higher road. But that's not, that's not a conversation that white parents have with their kids. And I don't think it's a conversation any parent should have with their kids, because racism shouldn't be tolerated in our sport.
Matt, how close did you come to just saying, I don't want to put myself through this, I don't want to continue, when you watched your parents leaving the rink so emotional?
My love for the game was strong, and I had some good friends around me that, would always stand up for me or try to pick me up when I was down, confronting other players when, I had to leave the rink. So I'm very fortunate for that. But over my years in the NHL, I've always made a stand of, wanting to bring players from minor hockey associations within Minnesota who have faced racism into our locker room. And sometimes it is the opposite story, where kids aren't sure if they want to continue playing this sport because it is so difficult, and they went through so many trying times with their family. So when I see that just breaks my heart. And I know there's a couple kids who have come through the room and completely flipped the script. They meet the guys, they meet some of their favorite players they've grown up watching, and that totally turns them around, because I think this racism and that your language and how you talk is definitely, kids are still learning that, and they can be ignorant at times and just childish. So as you grow up and realize there's no place for that, it becomes a more secure family and, brotherhood, like hockey. Hockey's kind of always been, but it starts with the youth.
Matt, you were the seventh overall pick when the Wild selected you, so you were in a high-profile spot coming into the franchise, coming into the organization. And you've seen what has played out on TV screens across North America and the world in Minnesota the last few weeks. What have you felt as you've seen a city where you've grown up in a lot of ways professionally go through this very difficult time?
Yeah, it's a city that's really taken me in with open arms. You know, I work with a group called ACES, Athletes Committed to Educating Students. And a lot of those students are from the neighborhoods and communities that, you know, are being burned down in the riots and the protests. And, you know, so I was really scared for those kids. I feel like I'm a part of those communities. I get on Lake Street there. That's a place where I've been going for tattoos for years. I have friends who live on that street. So seeing all that and just being here in Calgary has been very difficult for me because I want to be on those front lines. I want to be helping out. And just like some of my friends are, one in particular, JT Brown, who's been out, you know, helping hand out groceries, cleaning up the streets of Lake Street. You know, he's been awesome. So I've kind of been living vicariously through, my friends and family who are making a difference back in Minnesota. So I'm proud of them. So proud of them. I'm proud of how the community has come together now and is really picking each other up. So, I've got some things, that I'm going to release in this next week that will hopefully help benefit those who are in need right now. And I'd love to share this with you guys, but it's not come, it hasn't come full circle yet. It's not done yet, but I'll definitely reach out and, you know, look for support from everyone in this hockey world. Because I think go ahead.
No. That's fine. I was just going to say when it does happen, you can be sure that the hockey community will be well aware of it, and we'll pass it along as best we can. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to ask you about a report from Frank Saravalli from TSN. I give him credit for the report that said that when this alliance of players was coming together, that you all were able to speak with Colin Kaepernick on a couple of Zoom calls about that. If that's true, what advice was he able to pass along to the group about how to go forward?
That was pretty crazy. Having Cap on there and seeing how he's supporting what we're doing, and just kind of giving us advice on how to represent ourselves and how to represent the community was super cool. He's been on the front lines of it for a long time now, so just his insight and just wisdom was awesome to listen to. He had seven dudes on that call who were just sitting there, just silence when he talked. So it's really cool to see another guy from a different sport reaching out and recognizing that there's a need for this in hockey, and you know he wants to help out as much as we can get him involved.
Matt, what piece of advice did he give resonated the most with you?
I think the biggest one for me was just the unity that we'll have to have moving forward. You know, bringing people in, having the right ambassadors, including everyone. That's what this is about. Just eradicating racism. Can't be on the shoulders of seven guys. You know, everyone's gonna have a part of this, and you know we're just on this committee as the, you know, seven board members. But there's so many people who are gonna be behind the scenes, people who are gonna want to join this and make some moves. So there, it's just limitless. He didn't want us to box ourselves in to anything because. I think as we all see it, there can be a real change here in our sport, and we can kind of be the pioneers for this. And I hope this is just one step. You know, this is day two on the announcement of the HDA, and you know, hopefully a year from now we've done some big things. Then 2 years, three years, 4 years, and we can just watch this thing grow. Because I think it's time.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a hockey question. Just one last quick one here. Have you heard from any of your Wild teammates after this was announced?
Yeah, a couple of them have reached out. It's pretty cool showing their support. You know, I think this is guys, I think everyone can kind of see this in our game. If you just look around in an NHL locker room, there's not a lot of color. So that's just the facts of our game. But those guys are learning. They're seeing what's going on in the media, what's going on in our community back home. And, you know, I got some great teammates. So I know those guys are going to step up and, you know, they're going to support us through this. And that's what it's going to take. Every hand on deck.
One hockey question. Like your team, you had a slow start to the season, picked it up. We're making a good push here. We're on the edge of the playoffs. So really, the Wild are kind of the team that benefits. And it's just to have those teams 9 through 12 have a chance in this best of five, if we get to that final phase, to play for those eight spots in the Western Conference playoffs. How has your skating been? Have you been on skates? Are you starting to think about getting to these phases and getting yourself back into hockey shape as we start to round closer to that date?
Yeah, start of the year is tough. It was a long time off of hockey with my injury. And it's crazy. You got to just get back to that mindset that makes you the player you are. And kind of took me a little bit to find it, but I think it came around at the end of the year. And, you know, I was playing some of my best hockey and, you know, our team was buzzing. So to have this opportunity in front of us to play Vancouver, I know guys are excited. Guys are starting to get ready, starting to get on the ice. Me personally, I've only been on the rollerblades this far in Calgary. But I do know one of my friends has a barn just outside of town that he put some ice in. So I'll be able to skate there and skate with some guys. So that's going to be sweet.
Matt, I know it's an uphill climb here and not the easiest topic of conversation, but thank you for sharing the seeds behind this and your feelings. We look forward to seeing you what all seven of you and beyond do with this, and more importantly, see you back on the ice as well in hockey competition as an example for a lot of other kids around North America. Matt, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Lunch Talk Live will continue here on NBCSN. We'll be right back with you. Stay with us. All right, so NASCAR has done it. Other sports have done it. Now the PGA Tour officially returns this week at Colonial in Fort Worth. Tomorrow you'll see the start of the return of the PGA Tour season on Golf Channel, the Charles Schwab Challenge. And that's where Kevin Na, the defending champion, got a practice round in yesterday as he continues his preparations for the return. And resplendent in the jacket that goes to the champion is Kevin Na, who joins us now from Fort Worth. It's a little hot for that jacket from what I hear, Kev.
I got great air conditioning here. You know what? It's okay if it's hot. I can wear this anywhere.
It's nice when it's a champion's jacket, that's for sure. All right, what was it like yesterday to go out and play a practice round with a tour event for the first time in really 3 months?
Yeah, I got a chance to play nine holes yesterday. It was weird a little bit. We had 3 months off. And coming back, I haven't been able to practice a whole lot, but it was really nice to be back and to see my fellow competitors and to be able to have a little game with my friends. It was a lot of fun.
This bubble that has been discussed, the players trying to stay as within a bubble once the testing has gone on and all of that. Can you walk us through from when you started testing and leaving home to now, what you've been through and what it's been like?
Yes. So before we left home, every player sent in a test kit from home. And after you tested negative, you were able to fly. And once you got here, as soon as you get here, we went to a testing site where they did another test, and within a few hours we get a text saying that you tested negative. And once you get that text, you're able to go play a practice round, be able to go in the clubhouse, and use the facility. And they're taking every step possible to take the right precautions.
How comfortable do you feel so far doing all this stuff?
No, I feel really comfortable. It feels like everything feels normal besides the no fan part. Obviously, there's no fans this week, no grandstand. It's a totally different look to the golf course, and it's going to be a different atmosphere. But besides that, it feels somewhat normal. I mean, obviously, we're practicing social distancing, but the rest of it seems like we're back.
Kevin, I traveled once during this stretch, and I found it really odd to be in a hotel room, which I've done thousands of nights in my life, and you're thinking twice about everything you do. Have you found any of that as you get back out on the road?
Yes. Obviously, it was different being home 3 months straight. I mean, I can't remember the last time I did that. And I'm actually staying at a friend's house this week. It was just me and my caddy. Nobody's there. And I woke up in the morning, Tuesday morning, which was yesterday morning. I woke up, I looked around, and for a split second, I was like, where am I? I didn't know where I was for a split second. I was like, all right, sorry, we're back. I'm playing Colonia this week.
And here you are. Let's get to some golf here, because you can play, and you said you haven't been playing a ton, but played a little bit leading up to getting on the road. What are you thinking about in terms of managing your game and how rusty you might be, considering you haven't had that competitive sharpness that's week in, week out in a regular tour season?
Yeah, in the three-month stretch, I think I played 3 9 holes and then 1 18 hole the day before I left. So one full round before I got here. But, you know, I practiced, been working out. So my swing and game feels good. My coach, Drew Steckel, lives right down the street from me, so we got plenty of practice in. But I really don't know what to expect. My swing feels good, but at the same time, it's not the same as playing at home and at a tour event. So I have no expectation, or I don't know what to expect, I should say. But, you know, that first round is going to be really important for me, because for me to be able to get a good start, everything will go smoothly for the rest of the week.
Explain to the fans, as you're a champion there now at Colonial, your name's up on the board, you got to check that out as you came into the property. What is Colonial going to be like in June as players come back to the tour?
Yeah, Colonial in June is very, very warm. The temperatures are in the mid-90s with humidity. It's going to be important to stay hydrated this week. And the caddies they haven't caddied, you know, for a long time, and you know, players are going to be tired, and we're going to be rusty. You might see some. It's normal. When players are rusty, it happens. So it'll be interesting who plays well and who doesn't.
Yeah. Your history at Colonial has been pretty interesting here along the way. What did the victory mean to you last year?
Yeah, Colonial Country Club, it fits my game really well. I've had some success here. I've tied the course record 61. And it's something about this golf course that I feel really good about. And I always felt like I had a good chance of winning here. And I've led this tournament numerous of times. And for me to pull it off last year was a great feeling. To add that name, my name on the Wall of Champions on the first tee, it's a great feeling. And it's a golf course that I always want to, every year that I came back here, and I felt like, you know, I could win here. And to be able to validate that, it was an incredible feeling.
See Steve Stricker's name up on that wall as well, and Steve Stricker is the Ryder Cup captain. Some changes with the thoughts on the Ryder Cup, more captain's picks, if in fact it does happen, as opposed to the number of guys qualifying for it. As a player, how does that affect your mindset of a team that you'd hope to be a part of?
Yes, making the Ryder Cup team is a big goal of mine, and I did see that they changed that more captains pick for this year, and it makes sense because the season's been shortened. You know, you have to make some changes on, because you don't have as many opportunities to get points, and I understand what they're doing. I think they're making the right call. I'm sure Steve is going to be watching all the players, how they perform lately and how they performed before all this. So he'll take consideration of everything that's been going on. So I hope to be on the good side of Steve Stricker. I know I've had the opportunity to play with Steve a lot in the beginning of my early in my career. And, you know, I think I have a similar game as he does. So hopefully that will play an advantage role for me.
We had Jim Furyk, a past Ryder Cup captain, on the show last week, and he talked about how different the Ryder Cup would be without fans. The plan now is to play the first five events here, Hilton Head, Hartford, Detroit, and then the first of two at Muirfield Village outside of Columbus, Jack's Place, without fans. Can you just explain, in a sport where we've got volunteers holding up quiet please signs, how golfers might be impacted not having fans, that it might be tougher for you guys to play with no atmosphere?
We're definitely disappointed that there's no fans. I mean, fans is what makes the atmosphere of a sporting event. And, you know, when you make a key putt, or when you make the putt to win a golf tournament, and that roar and then that cheer, you remember that for a long time. And the fact that we won't have the opportunity to have that is disappointing. But we're still excited to play back. The fans will be watching on TV, and we know that, and all around the world. It's a totally different atmosphere. It's a totally different feeling. Like you said, there's no quiet sign that needs to be held up by volunteers. There's not going to be many volunteers. And another thing is that fans help you find golf balls when you hit it, you know, off play. And we're going to have a more difficult time finding golf balls because there's less eyes on the ball.
You brought it up, so thanks to the entree. You made a 16 famously at the Texas Open 1 year. Then, by the way, went back, played the same hole with only a 6-iron, and made a 5. So it was just one of those days and one of those moments. But when you made that 16, you were wearing a microphone. And there's been some talk, and there will be a few players who are going to wear a microphone during competition this week. Will you do it? And what do you think of players doing it during PGA Tour rounds that count, not an exhibition like we saw with Mickelson and Tiger, and then the TaylorMade one with Rory and the guys a couple of weeks before that?
I think being mic'd up is a little bit of pressure, but at the same time, I think once you start playing, you kind of forget about it, and it can be fun for the fans. And you know, fans want to know what you and your caddy talk about, or what you and some fellow competitors talk about during the round, and it can be very entertaining. My first time that I ever got mic'd, I made a 16 on a hole 9 at the TPC San Antonio. That was the last time I ever wore a mic. So, no, I will not be wearing a mic this week.
Well, since you did that, we'll bring a famous good one to you. A couple of years back at the Players, you and Tiger had that great back and forth on 17, chasing the putt in as you reached for it almost before it got in the hole, and then Tiger followed in kind. It was just one of the genuine good laughs on the golf course during a competition we've ever seen, with Tiger especially. You got any plans for chasing the ball in the hole and going to get it before it drops this week?
Yeah, that became kind of my signature move after Tiger imitated me at the Players Championship last year. It was a great moment. It almost felt like a practice round. We forgot there was fans everywhere. I mean, there was a lot of people on that hole. And it just felt like a moment that you would do for fun when you're playing, you know, with the guys in the practice round or at home. And it was a great moment. I've done it my whole career, and I'm going to keep doing it. I'll probably do it sometime this week, and hopefully, you know, I don't miss. and it's going to be fun.
That would change the look of it. That would change the look of it. If you're chasing it and it doesn't go in, that would be a different world. Hey, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. We know the week is unique and different and busy. You are the defending champ. It's nice to get back to golf, and we look forward to watching you this week, Kevin. All the best, man.
Thanks, Mike.
Kevin Na there. Our golf conversation continues. Brandel Chamblee, our colleague from the Golf Channel, will look ahead to what we might see in the restart of the tour as Lunch Talk Live continues in a minute. It was good to talk to Kevin Na, and now the next step is getting back to golf. And as we do, Golf Channel will have the coverage for those first four events and all the events on Thursday, Friday. Here is the lineup with Golf Central pregame coming up on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, leading in to to the network coverage, a lot of it for the return of golf tomorrow. Brandel Chamblee will be a part of it, and he joins me here now for a wrap-up couple of minutes on golf. Brandel, it has been so long, really three full months. What are you expecting when guys get back to it tomorrow?
Well, probably a lot of enthusiasm from the players' perspective. Just been watching them on social media, amping up, getting ready for this event. It looks like many of them are going to be, or not many of them, but a few of them are going to be mic'd up. So we're all going to get a little different taste of the PGA Tour without any fans, but some huge enthusiasm from the players and from the PGA Tour executives, I think, just to get back to some semblance of normalcy.
You give me the golfer who's been away from the sport for a little bit, practiced, played some games, but you come back now and do it for real, even though there are no fans there. Do you expect there'll be a couple of weeks ramp up for some of the top names?
Yeah, I think so. Look, if you go back and just look at the TaylorMade driving relief, even though they were out there for, you know, great causes to raise some money, you know, there were some obvious signs of some rust. So I think from a physical standpoint, the players are going to be healthier than they've ever been. There's never been a break like this in the history of the PGA Tour going back to the Second World War. So physically, I think they'll be in great shape. Technically, they may be a little bit rusty. And elsewhere around and on the greens, I think we'll see some rust. But by and large, you're going to see, I think, a great amount of enthusiasm. And look, I think all of us are looking forward to the lighter entertainment that sports provides, you know, just a nice distraction from the uncertainty and unrest, epically so, of the last 3 months.
Yeah, agreed. We'll see Mickelson, Rory McIlroy among the players. Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, and Brooks Koepka, 1, 2, 3 in the world, just like they were the last time we had golf, the Players' Championship, all in the same group. How do you feel those super groups, if you will, impact the play amongst those players?
I think this is one of the great sort of spinoffs of the FedEx Cup, is that we have come to see the very best players getting paired together week after week for, you know, I think some terrific momentum from a spectator perspective. But I think they feed off of each other. There's a little bit of competitiveness within them to not be outdriven, to, you know, not be beat by the immediacy of their group. But just looking a little deeper at that Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Brooks Koepka trio that you've talked about going out. Rory McIlroy, well noted. I mean, he hasn't finished outside the top five in seven straight events. This is the most consistent, best run of his career. Similarly, John Rahm comes in here, again, not having played in a few months, but when he when the game was postponed, he was on a high note, and he's got a chance to be the number one player in the world, should he win this week at Colonial. And Brooks Koepka is quite the other extreme. Almost inexplicably, Brooks Koepka hasn't had a top 15 finish in seven events that he's.
Brandel, let me jump back here. I think we may have lost Brandel's audio there for a second. No, I think we still have him. Let me ask you one 15-second quick question before we're done. Jordan Spieth, you think he may be in position to have a good stretch coming back here? Why? Oh, no, I was right. We did lose him. But Brandel did say that he thought Jordan Spieth was in position for a really good stretch. Jordan Spieth had his poorest year last year since he had hit some high levels on the PGA Tour. His feeling is that Spieth has a chance to come back, a little bit of a break from the technical and working with his swing coach, Cameron McCormick. We'll see how he comes back. Golf's back tomorrow. Rick Carlisle and Jimmy Johnson. Basketball and NASCAR. Headline the Rich Eisen Show, which starts right now. And we will see you tomorrow.